Quinte in Napanee, and the Cape Vincent Correctional Facility in upstate New York. Messages and song requests will be broadcast once per month on Wednesday between 7 and 8 p.m. here on CFRC 101.9 FM or on the web at cfrc.ca. For 2025, Calls from Home will air on the following dates: April 16th, May 14th, June 11th, July 9th, August 6th, September 3rd, October 1st, October 29th, November 26th, and December 24th. Please send in your message at least one day before the broadcast date. These upcoming show dates, contact info, and additional information is available online at cfrc.ca or on Instagram at CFRC Prison Radio. We look forward to receiving your messages and sharing them over the airwaves.
Visit The Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Greetings, loved ones. This is DJ Nasty Nexus coming to you live and direct from CFRC 101.9. I'm here to bring you the goods from my new show, Classless Radio, airing every Friday night at 11 p.m. I'll be giving you hits and hidden gems all the way from jazz to blues and hip-hop and R&B. Music from the soul that everybody needs. Hop on my wavelengths and get right with the kid to kick off your big weekend. Stay tuned.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Good morning, it is 11 a.m. on Friday, January 2nd, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, the first of 2026, we'll be recapping some December Council decisions that closed out 2025, the city's recent bird-friendly city certification from Nature Canada, and more. The City of Kingston has officially received an entry-level bird-friendly city certification from Nature Canada. To obtain a bird-friendly city status, a municipality must earn points across three categories: threat reduction, habitat protection, restoration and climate resilience, and community reach and education. Certification is awarded on one of three levels: entry, intermediate, or high. The city established a bird team about a year ago to work towards making Kingston more bird safe. Notably, the city held a public poll to name an official bird this past fall, a lively race which ended in a tie between the cardinal and the crow. According to the city, Kingston's application received strong marks, bordering on the intermediate level. Karen Santucci, Director of Public Works and Solid Waste with the city, sat down with CFRC to share more about the city's bird-friendly status. I was wondering if you could just tell us a bit about the city's bird team and the work that's gone into this to get us here.
Yeah, so the city started working on their bird-friendly certification about a year ago. We have a bird friendly team, which is a very, we've got some very active people on the team. The team consists of some community groups like Little Forests, Master Gardeners, Kingston Field Naturalists, Sustainable Kingston. It includes people from Queens and St. Lawrence. It includes some representation from some different Indigenous groups. So it's a very active team. And we worked together to pull together an application. And the application really looked at a number of different things. It looked at threat reduction. It looked at how to conserve and restore and create bird habitats. And it looked at how do we engage the public. So the city worked on that, but the team also worked together. So the team came together. They did three World Migratory Bird Days this year. One of the groups had got a grant to run one of those Migratory World Bird Days where they did a hedge seminar. So they taught people how to plant hedges, which were great for birds populations as well. So lots of stuff has gone into it. Our application went in. We were certified at the entry level, but we were like 1 point short of intermediate level. So our bird team is working really hard right now to make sure we can gain that point and move us up to an intermediate level for next year.
Awesome. And you just mentioned there, bird team has no plans of stopping. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about what's in the works and maybe what we're going to see in 2026.
Yeah, so 2026, we actually have a meeting coming up in February to talk about what our goals are going to be for that for next year. I think what you will probably see is some stuff on light pollution that we'll be working on, some stuff on bird window collisions that we'll be working on, and possibly some stuff on roaming cats. There's a lot that's also happening with the city. So right now the city is working on their official plan. We're working on our natural heritage study. We're working our forestry management strategy. Out of that will also come our tree bylaw. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that's happening at the city that will go into that conserve, restore, create bird habitat sections of the report. And hopefully we'll see some changes in that in the next year as well.
Awesome. And what can residents do to contribute and keep up with all these developments?
We have a new bird-friendly page on the city's website, which talks about all these different areas and gives residents some ideas of things that they could do to help support birds as well. So we encourage people to take a look at that. Other things they can do is just, you know, making sure they're creating habitat for trees, not letting cats roam. If they're leaving out food, understanding where that best is to go and what quality of food people should be putting out. Lots of things they can do, lots of ideas on our website. Lots of work also with Little Forests, Master Gardeners, Kingston Field Naturalists. They're always working on things to do with birds, plants. So anyone who's looking to be involved, that's an excellent avenue as well to join in with the community and work on some of these activities with us.
Once again, that was Karen Santucci, Director of Public Works and Solid Waste with the City of Kingston. As Santucci said, the city and their bird team look forward to setting new goals and advancing Kingston's status as a bird-friendly city next year. Learn more about the city's bird-friendly city activities and how to make your home a bird-friendly space at cityofkingston.ca/bird-friendly. Kingston community organizations are working together to address intimate partner violence in KFLNA through a new awareness campaign. See It, Name It, Change It is an educational campaign encouraging community members to learn to identify harmful behaviors, call them out, and take safe, effective action. The working group behind the campaign came together in 2024, after City Council declared intimate partner violence an epidemic in the region in 2023. The group is comprised of Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee, Kingston Interval House, Resolve Counseling Services, Kingston Anti-Violence Advisory Council, Southeast Public Health, the City of Kingston, and United Way, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington. The local campaign features photographs of Kingston community members holding signs with the campaign slogan. The photographs, taken by local photographer Will O'Hare, feature an Indigenous elder, a musician, a paramedic, the medical officer of health, a trades worker, the local Canadian Forces Base Commander, a Correctional Services Canada Commissioner, an artist, and a Queen's student. See It, Name It, Change It launched in conjunction with the Global 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence, featuring the images and resources on social media and local digital displays. Ruth Nordegroff, Director of Community Development and Well-Being and IIDEA at the City of Kingston, sat down with CFRC to share more about the campaign. For listeners who may not have heard of it yet, what is the See It, Name It, Change It campaign, and what is it aiming to do?
It's actually a campaign that was initially created in the Lanark County. So we are, you know, not that creative. We really build it off their initial campaign. And it's really focused on really education around intimate partner violence and really call people or support people to take action. Obviously, it kind of focuses on not only identifying, but also calling out, changing, and ultimately stopping intimate partner violence in our community.
Mm-hmm. And the campaign uses photographs of community members holding that message. I was wondering why this approach was chosen and what impact you guys are hoping it has.
Well, we want to make sure that it really feels as something that is, you know, touching everybody and everybody should be part of. So we choose, like, obviously some folks that people might recognize in our community. You know, we've chosen, you know, leaders of different institutions, musicians, artists, but also folks that that work in, you know, certain professions like healthcare, trades, education. So we really wanted to make it like diverse and touch on everybody and hopefully also really create some, I would say, recognition in the community around this and starting a conversation.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this has started in other cities. I was wondering if you could speak to why it was so important to bring this to Kingston now.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually something that we've been working on over the last few years. Obviously, I work for the city of Kingston and city council back in 2023 actually declared intimate partner violence as an epidemic. There's about 100 municipalities that have done the same. And we're hopeful that at some point the province also will take that same approach. So we've, after that, really started to work on how do we bring all the partners together that work on preventing intimate partner violence and also supporting victims and members of the community. And we thought that this campaign would really be a good start to bring this message out in the community in an impactful way.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you've gotten any response, whether it's from folks who participated maybe in taking the pictures or folks who've seen the campaign.
Well, we launched it this week and we've definitely seen some responses on social media. People are really kind of picking this up in a positive way. What we really try to do as well is making sure that there's a link to resources. So if people see this campaign and they may want to learn more, that they actually go to the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence website, which has a survivor handbook and lots of other tools for people to educate themselves. So yeah, we've overall seen some positive reactions. We've received some questions around resources for all genders. So it's really good dialogue and conversation.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And where can folks find more about this campaign, view all these pictures, and find resources?
Well, hopefully on as many social media platforms as possible. We really hope it's kind of this opportunity for people to share and reshare these photos. But the different partners that have been working on this are the City of Kingston, the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee, Interpro House, Resolve, the Southeast Health Units, and the United Way. So all those agencies will have these resources on their websites. But ultimately, we really hope that folks are going to the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence website, which has all the resources and tools.
Once again, that was Ruth Nordegroff with the City of Kingston on the See It, Name It, Change It campaign here in KFLNA. The working group hopes to expand the campaign to more locations in the coming months. For more information and resources, you can visit kfacc.org. Kingston Health Sciences Center has received $1.8 million in new funding from Ontario Health to expand services at its detoxification center. KHSC's Detox Center is the only publicly funded withdrawal management site between Ottawa and Oshawa, a crucial lifeline for people across eastern Ontario seeking recovery. Without it, many individuals would be left facing risky withdrawal at home, long wait times, or long-distance travel for support. The center currently operates as a Level 2 medically supported model. With this new investment, it will transition to a Level 3 detoxification site, offering 24-hour medical services. The funding will support several major enhancements, including 4 new medical support beds, 24/7 registered practical nurse coverage for continuous clinical oversight, a new nurse practitioner position for weekend coverage, and reclassification of all 22 existing beds as observation beds, allowing the center to fully operate them as intake-ready beds. KHSC's Executive Vice President of Patient Care and Chief Nursing Executive, Jason Hahn, spoke with CFRC about what this expansion means for addiction care across the region.
We now will have 24-hour medical management on site. So with this, we will be having registered practical nurses 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as well as nurse practitioner support on the weekends, which is a great addition. So patients can present to the detoxification center, and it's voluntary presentation to the detoxification center for, you know, safely managed detoxification from alcohol or drugs. What this will provide is that we can medically monitor our patients. We can manage them through medications, through assessments. And when patients are detoxifying from alcohol or drugs, you know, symptoms can be everything from, you know, fever, chills. You can be quite anxious, restless, and agitated, up to and including delirium. And in some cases, you can have increased heart rate and cardiac symptoms. And what we're seeing is there's a lot more toxic drugs out there. And as a result, the withdrawal symptoms are much, much more severe. So this will really help us manage them medically. And what it really will help is, you know, when they enter our detoxification center, they can stay with us. Prior to that, they would have to, if we were not able to manage them there, medically manage them at the detoxification center, they would either have to go to our emergency department at the KGH site to be managed, up to including an inpatient mission to one of our inpatient beds, say a medicine bed at KGH site, or to our mental health and addictions inpatient units. So really providing safe, you know, trauma-informed addiction care and management at the detox center. And as a result of the funding, our goal is to increase the number of patients that we're going to care for in a year by 20%. And we care for about 760 patients now on an annual basis.
This upgrade comes at a critical time. The local drug supply is becoming increasingly toxic, and more clients are arriving at the hospital sicker and with more medical complications than ever before. Overall, KHSC says the enhanced services will help more people withdraw safely, reduce pressure on hospitals, and strengthen the region's addiction care system.
You know, as a result of going from a level 2 to a level 3 now with medical management 24/7. So we built capacity. We have regulated healthcare professionals that'll be on site 24/7. So we're able to provide the care for the patients that present there. So if, for example, in our current model, you know, we could have a patient that's detoxifying and you know, we're caring for them, but we're not able to medically manage them. So, for example, you know, they develop increased heart rate, they become quite agitated or delirious. We would have to transfer them to the emergency department at a KGH. That would include plus or minus an admission to an inpatient unit. So, you know, if you think about that, you know, you provide the care and we're able to improve access. So if you think about it being a voluntary detoxification center, so, you know, patients walk up to the door. I mean, you know, we always request if they call ahead just to make sure, but, you know, you could walk up and knock on the door and we're able to accept them. And at times now we're saying we don't have capacity and we're not able to manage you, but, you know, please go to the emergency department for care. So if you think about just, you know, providing care and compassionate care for the patients that are struggling with addiction, and addiction is a health issue. So, you know, patients and individuals with addictions to whether alcohol or drugs deserve compassionate, quality medical care.
KHSC hopes these changes will make it easier and safer for people to take that first, often hardest step toward recovery. To learn more about Kingston's Detoxification Center, located at 240 Brock Street, visit the KHSC website. 4 Queen's students have launched a mental health tool designed just for students.
CEDL.ca is a free, verified directory of supports for university campuses across the country. I sat down with the team to learn how it all started, what they discovered, and their hopes for the future.
My name is Yohanathan Chakargi. I am a second year in health sciences, and I'm responsible for the technology aspect within CEDL.
My name is Tobori Akpoyebe. I am also in second year of health science. I am responsible for marketing.
My name is William Wu. I'm also in second year health sciences, and my role is financially planning the events at CEDL.
My name is Sharman Dabidian. I'm in second year of health sciences, and my role is with the operations of CEDL.
The idea for CEDL began in their first year at Queen's, when the group noticed the struggle that comes with navigating university life and mental health.
Essentially, last year, we all started university, and so we recognized that that was kind of like a time where we had a bunch of new experiences, whether that be through meeting different peoples, different clubs, and so there's a lot of strain. A lot of the time, you can get so immersed within like all the different learnings that you do, and you can kind of put your mental health on a back burner. And so we started talking a little bit, and we recognized it's much, much more common than you'd expect. And so we really wanted to do something about that. And that's where CEDL came from. We really thought, okay, if this is such a recurring problem, how can we make mental health resources more accessible to everybody, especially within the university context?
Each founder took on a role and built a platform that filters resources by category, identity-affirming supports, and more.
The first thing we thought about is making a directory. So essentially, having a place where you'd be able to really see all these resources, especially because you can more so grasp, okay, is there a disparity within this community? Like, can we address that as well? Beyond that, we started thinking, okay, how do we filter out these resources? So whether it's like a BIPOC resource or LGBTQ plus IA, or whether that be a specific type of support, crisis line, community counseling, we thought about filtering as well.
We have various different categories of resources on our website. We have like online resources and in-person resources. And the way that our website really works is that we have specific campuses across Canada the students can choose from. For example, Queen's University. And based off of that campus, there's different resources around them that they can have access to and that they will see. And if it's like an in-person resource, we have a feature where it says like how many kilometers that campus is away from that resource. We provide various different types of categories throughout our depository so that students can really go through these categories and pick a resource that's more tailored and catered towards their mental health needs.
The team says that students are uniquely vulnerable because of factors like workload and change in environment.
I think especially for students, we're always in such a busy time of our lives, whether it's clubs, making new friends, schoolwork, classes. It's always super busy and people really just put their mental health in the back of their mind. They don't really focus on it. They're just too busy with their work, with their life. Yes, we do all this work as students. Yes, we're so busy, but we also need to be happy with our lives. We need to make sure that we're doing something that we are happy with. And that's why mental health is so important, just to make sure that you are not only being successful, but also that you are happy with the state of life that you have.
The team also pointed to the stigma that comes with discussing mental health and the role of education and institutions in addressing this.
I think a big thing, a lot of the time there is this sort of stigma that's associated with mental health. Somebody could be perceived as weak in that regard because they are looking for that mental health. I think education plays such a fundamental role when it comes to that seeking of support. I think making different awareness campaigns and really just showing that, hey, this is an acceptable thing. You should be reaching out to support because, as Sherman mentioned, success, that's a part of your success in life. It's your whole quality of life is based on the way that you sort of see these things. And having that background and that level of support is so necessary. So I would definitely say when it comes to universities and campuses, more so making it more accessible and more known that, hey, this is totally an option and there's no stigma associated with it.
I was also going to say that's why CEDL is so important in that manner in regards because we provide that resource that universities can go ahead and share. It's really hard to gather these different resources and put them together in a depository, but we've already done that and provided it for the general population. So universities can then use CEDL to kind of help educate others also about the different mental health support systems and resources that exist throughout Canada.
While mapping resources across the country, the team uncovered some gaps, especially in Northern and Indigenous communities.
I think there's a diverse variety of resources available for many like students in universities, such as like in Ontario and like British Columbia, for example. But like other provinces and territories, especially the Northern Territories, there's a huge like disparity in the resources that they have available. There's not many like helplines. There's not many like community counseling resources. And it's very, very sad that there are these disparities, because especially in the like Northern Territories, these communities themselves are highly populated with Indigenous peoples, and it's very unfortunate that these communities are lacking these important mental health services and needs. And that's some disparity that we've realized that exists, and that's something we also want to address.
Moving forward, using their database, the team wants to work with universities and governments to fill these gaps and improve access to mental health resources nationwide.
One thing that we've realized is by kind of making a list of like resources, we can also figure out what's missing from these communities. If we have XYZ resources in this community, we also know, oh, we're missing this resource. So by figuring out these disparities, we can kind of do a study and see, oh, these different university campuses, these different cities are missing these resources. So we should be collaborating with the government, collaborating with these universities so that we can expand and make sure that these missing resources are filled in so that all students have access to all different types of resources for their mental health needs. And an example of this is like Indigenous specific resources. There are some universities that are lacking these resources. So a next step would be to reach out to these universities and say, oh, your city is lacking like Indigenous specific resources for mental health. We need to do something about this. This is a huge problem. And how can we go forward? So that's kind of the next step and next kind of vision that we have with CEDL and what we plan on doing in the future.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I think something that's important is we are trying to build that trust and that rapport with a bunch of different universities and students, because I think something that's super important is knowing that these resources are ethical and verified, and they're very accurate to these different needs. So I think, yeah, something we do want to work on in the future as well is more so building that rapport, expanding on it.
In response to feedback from students, the CEDL team is also looking into adding OHIP and UHIP coverage information to make costs clearer. Once again, CEDL.ca is free, no login, and already being used on multiple campuses. The team hopes it becomes a trusted tool and a catalyst for change in student mental health support. For more information, you can visit CEDL.ca.
Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is the City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, winter traffic parking restrictions are in effect as of December 1st. This means that during December and March, overnight on-street parking will be banned only if the weather and conditions require it, so if it's particularly snowy or icy. But during January and February, all overnight on-street parking is banned, no matter the weather conditions. It is a short list of road closures this week. Aberdeen William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street Princess to Mac is also closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. And then in terms of other delays, Bay Ridge Drive Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Cataraqui Woods Drive Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a multi-use pathway. Front Road Sand Bay to Country Club, expect those same delays for flood proofing, traffic reduced to one lane in each direction. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road. This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the week. Friday, January 2nd, we're out of the run of nasty weather here in the city of Kingston. Daytime high of -7 with partly sunny conditions. Overnight low of -12, feeling closer to -13. Saturday, January 3rd, daytime high of -8. Overnight low of -16 with sunny conditions. Sunday, January 4th, daytime high of -7, low of -11. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, January 5th, daytime high of -4 with a 76% chance of light snowfall in the forecast.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news.
Kingstonians can expect a new monument in Breakwater Park in 2026, with Council unanimously supporting a request from Kingston's Rotary Clubs for the city's first peace pole. Moved by Councillor Brandon Tozzo, the motion highlights the work of Kingston's four Rotary Clubs: the Rotary Club of Kingston, Cataraqui Kingston Rotary Club, Kingston Waterfront Rotary Club, and Kingston Frontenac Rotary Club. Rotary has more than 100 years of history in the city, supporting local organizations through direct service, fundraising, and community partnerships. Rotary is a global network of more than 46,000 clubs worldwide, servicing their communities. Rotary clubs across the globe have installed more than 250,000 peace poles, monuments bearing the message, "May peace prevail on earth." John Farrow with the Cataraqui Kingston Rotary Club spoke before council, explaining what a peace pole entails.
And peace poles have been around for decades, but the goal of Rotary International is the planting of peace poles in communities all around the world. A peace pole is a tangible symbol of Rotary's commitment to peace building. The pole is four-sided and divided into top and bottom halves, making eight panels. One panel is reserved for the sponsoring club or clubs, and this one would say the Rotary Clubs of Kingston. The other panels display the message, "May peace prevail on earth," in seven languages. The ones selected for this peace pole are English, French, obviously, Mohawk, Ojibwe, Mandarin, Portuguese, and Arabic. The Aboriginal languages are the two most common spoken in the area, according to the Indigenous Language Nest. And Mandarin, Portuguese, and Arabic are the most common non-English or French languages spoken in the area, according to City of Kingston statistics. You'll see a little gold plaque at the waist of the peace pole. That is the message in Braille as well for vision impaired.
Councillor Brandon Tozzo brought the motion forward, framing it as both a recognition of Rotary Club's work and a forward-looking partnership.
I'm bringing forward a motion that highlights something very special in our community and the people who choose to serve it in the spirit of peace, collaboration, service to that embodied by the Kingston's Rotary Clubs. Here in Kingston, we're fortunate enough not to have one, but four Rotary Clubs. The Rotary Club of Kingston, the Cataraqui Kingston Rotary Club, the Kingston Waterfront Club, and the Kingston Frontenac Club. Collectively, their members give thousands of hours each year to projects to strengthen our cities, support families, help youth, and advance sustainable and community well-being. I think their track record speaks for itself. One of Rotary's long-standing initiatives is the installation of peace poles. These are simple but powerful monuments inscribed with the simple message, "May peace prevail." More than 250,000 peace poles have been installed worldwide in parks, in schools, in city centers, and in places where communities gather. They stand as reminders that peace is not an abstract idea. It's something we build together, one action, one relationship, and one moment at a time. Kingston's Rotary Clubs have asked to partner with the city to install the first peace pole here in Kingston. They have proposed Breakwater Park, working in collaboration with staff, as a motion, a space where residents, students, and visitors come together, where we celebrate our waterfront, and where a permanent symbol of peace would be both visible and meaningful.
With unanimous support from council, city staff will now work in partnership with Kingston's Rotary Clubs to identify a suitable location within Breakwater Park, with a goal of installing the peace pole no later than the second quarter of 2026.
This modest request will have a positive impact. It will strengthen our partnership with organizations that consistently invest in our community. It adds small but significant symbol of unity in a well-loved public space and underscores Kingston's commitment to being a city that chooses peace in how we live, how we serve, and how we engage with each other.
At their last meeting, council supported a motion advocating for provincial support on the Kingston Health Sciences Center redevelopment project. Kingston Health Sciences Center is the largest acute care and cancer center in southeastern Ontario, serving more than 500,000 residents across the region.
The proposed KHSC redevelopment project includes a major rebuild of the aged Kingston General Hospital site and the Cancer Center of Eastern Ontario. The motion put forward by Councillor Connie Glenn advocates to the province of Ontario for the prioritization and full funding of the project and requests the support of neighboring municipalities across southeastern Ontario for a unified regional voice. This motion also comes as the province is currently consulting Ontarians about their 2026 budget priorities. Glenn made her case before council.
The timing of this motion is absolutely critical. So right now, the provincial government is moving forward with making decisions on capital expenditures. And unfortunately, we're in a position where our hospital is moving to being on life support itself. We've had situations where just a few weeks ago, there was flooding in the hospital, creating a delay in surgeries and cancellations of surgeries for an entire day. This is not simply Kingston's hospital. Kingston's hospital is a regional hospital. And so the outreach to the neighboring communities as well as neighboring MPPs is critical in moving this forward. So we take in patients from the borders of Toronto all the way through to Cornwall and then north up through Smith Falls and that entire area. So if our hospital does not continue to function as fully as possible, we are going to see care that decreases, and we are going to potentially see some really unfortunate events. I don't want to catastrophize here because I know that we have a great medical team over there that will do their utmost to provide care for people, but they need the facilities and the infrastructure. So the project that has been proposed, as many of us are aware, is a four-phase project, but we need to get phase one underway immediately because phase one contains monies that would help support the current hospital. So this would help with ensuring that the current site can replace its emergency power systems so that power doesn't go out in the hospital. Fire systems need to be upgraded. We need to make sure that we don't get flooding anymore so that we don't delay surgeries that people critically need to move on. The other part of this phase one funding is for site preparation so that we can move ahead with actually building that new hospital that this area so critically needs. So I'm hopeful that everybody here sees the absolute urgency of passing this motion and getting the provincial government to understand that the need is greater than just Kingston itself. It is Eastern Ontario. Eastern Ontario deserves to have a hospital facility that is top drawer. We have great staff. The hospital has worked very diligently the last couple of years to increase its staff complement, to bring in new physicians, nurses, so that we can provide the care that everyone needs. So let's give them a facility that's worthy of the care that everyone here in the community needs, and let's urge the government to put this up on the top of their priority list in terms of capital expenditures moving forward for the next year so that we can all make sure that our friends, family, and community are well taken care of.
With unanimous support from Council, the call for support in improving care across the region has been sent. Council is formally pushing back against the province's plans to amalgamate conservation authorities across Ontario. At a recent meeting, Council passed a motion affirming strong support for the continued independence of the Cataraqui Conservation Authority, an organization that plays a key role in protecting local watersheds, wetlands, shorelines, and biodiversity across the region. The motion was moved by Councillor Gary Osteroff, who highlighted the CCA's long track record of local expertise, fiscal responsibility, and accountability to the communities it serves.
You know, we're sounding the alarm that this is quite a change for us. And so when you're on the board and you see what's happening, it causes alarm. And to have been chair and been involved as deeply as I have for my entire time on council, it's been nothing but inspiring for me to be part of this organization that is incredibly financially good steward of what we've been given. And when you think about what we do in the flood forecasting and the stormwater and everything that is handled it doesn't get done at a better price. So I just think that we have to be really careful to make these changes, and we just want to bring it to light, and hopefully we are able to make some suggestions and inputs that our government would be listening to.
Beyond environmental protection, the CCA provides essential services including flood forecasting and warnings, drinking water source protection, environmental education, and the management of conservation areas valued by residents. Councillor Don Amos, who seconded the motion, also raised concerns about the province's direction.
Environmental protection is not a one-size-fits-all, and this feels like a Toronto, once again, issue that is being now doled out to the whole province. And the main crux from my observation is that two CAs, or conservation authorities, two CAs sit in certain municipalities, or one municipality, and there seems to be communication and confusion when they have three people sitting together trying to figure out land use planning. And when you get in the minister's ear or the premier's ear about issues, sometimes a full sweep seems to happen. And this, in my observation, this has come into play again. Making five CAs come together to make one massive one on the Eastern region, or the St. Lawrence, if they're calling it that, the St. Lawrence region, is not going to bode well. Right now, this council can call up anyone in the Conservation Authority, have a direct conversation with a staff member. That staff member would know precisely where the councillor is talking about of concern and can help address that matter. This goes to a regional aspect. The St. Lawrence Conservation Authority, of what they're proposing, could be housed in Ottawa, could be housed in Cornwall, wherever. And now we're reaching out. The board has hinted that it could be 70 members strong. Good heavens, good luck in making a decision on that. There is no way that service levels and community values can happen and go through this when you create a size of a conservation authority of this magnitude. There will be no, from my observations, fiscal responsibility. When you have a forced amalgamation and back office integration, sometimes it works, most times it doesn't, because it's forced. It's not two collaborations coming together. It's an overbody that is saying you will do this. And most times that doesn't end well for anybody, and except the taxpayer ends up paying more. Right now, the City of Kingston is roughly 50% of the Conservation Authority's budget. We are the largest municipality in that realm. Hence, we have four councillors that sit on that board of directors. But I can say wholeheartedly, GM Ellingwood and his team are fiscally responsible. They are doing what they need to do to support the region in anything from land use patterns to environmental risks. And that's because of the relationships that we have built through this council. And I don't see that happening going to a larger entity.
During discussion, several councillors emphasized that amalgamation risks weakening local decision-making. Councillor Brandon Tozo spoke to this alongside other concerning trends in decisions made by the province.
Who's asking for this? Like, who is asking to take away local authority over conservation, make several larger authorities? Like, where's the advocacy that has been done at a local level for this? I'm reading through the information report earlier was infuriating. Like, each CA has different policies, they have different processes, they have different staffing. Of course they do, because they're dealing with different environmental considerations. And I think we've seen time and time again, this government reduce the power of conservation authorities. And I think this is just another way to further reduce local control and local decision-making over conservation, something that is, we are stewards of the environment for the next generation. This is just absolutely infuriating. I hate the fact that this government, on the big things that we're advocating for, ignores us, and on the little things where we have some degree of say, takes it away. It's just, yeah, this is a lump of coal in Doug Ford's stocking, if I could do it.
Councillors Vincent Shinani and Gregory Ridge also added that opposition isn't just coming from council chambers.
I've actually spoken to a bunch of constituents who actually approached me to talk to me about this and how concerned they were. So, you know, voters are concerned about this. like greatly. It's not just a few people that approach me. So I think it's really important that we keep this local and smaller so that we can make better decisions.
I've had a number of constituents reach out to me to advocate for something like this before the agenda was presented. And so I'm very glad to see that it's here. I do also remind those constituents that this is ultimately a decision that will be made by the province, and encourage them to reach out to the member of provincial parliament, in this case, Mr. Hsu. But at our own level, in terms of an advocacy piece, I think this is important to make our position very clear.
The motion also directs the city to formally share its position with the premier, relevant provincial ministers, local MPPs, the Cataraqui Conservation Authority, and municipalities across the watershed, encouraging others to voice similar support. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. Tonight, kick off the weekend with trivia at Wild Wings Kingston at 7 p.m., followed by country karaoke at The Buckle at 9 and regular karaoke at Daft Brewing also at 9. On Saturday, January 3rd, head to the market at Springer Market Square from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and the New Year's celebration at the square from 1 to 3 p.m. You can finish off the weekend on Sunday, January 4th with late night karaoke at the Toucan starting at 10:30 p.m. That wraps up your quick Friday forecast. For more events and concerts, be sure to head to our website at cfrc.ca for our full events and concerts listings. If you have an event or concert you'd like to add to our online or on-air calendar, reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Guys, gals, non-binary pals, different circles is moving. Same day, different time slot. We're now on Fridays at 9 p.m. Join me from 9 to 10 p.m. for an adventure through sound. Who knows? You might just find your next favorite song.
Saturday mornings. Whether you're waking up in a stranger's apartment or enjoying some time with the family, you need a nutritional breakfast for your ears. So join me, DJ Over Easy, for Making Bacon every Saturday morning from 8 until 10 on CFRC 101.9 and CFRC.ca.
CFRC 101.9 FM every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. You'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephone interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by our friends at Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present a selection from Morio, the first full-length album by Kingston artist Lucas Wimmer. Performed, recorded, mixed, and mastered entirely by him in his home studio, this album is a departure from his previous releases and projects with a focus on songwriting. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Morio by Lucas Wimmer on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it here called Let Go with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Cher, I think you're pretty funny.
I think you're pretty funny too, Cher.
Well, that's good because, you know, 30 Years of Nonsense is a great show and we do it every Thursday from 4 to 5.
We absolutely do. And people can listen in at CFRC 101.9 or CFRC.ca.
Yeah, and we play basically all of our music from the 70s, the 80s, 90s, and current in all different genres.
And we share all of our nonsense and memories. I really hope people listen in.
Me too. See you there.
Listen to Let It Happen on Saturdays at 1 p.m. till 2 p.m. for a little bit of psych, a little bit of pop, and a whole lot of... Rock and roll radio. CFRC 101.9 FM.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Medicine Man, the third single from the Empties upcoming EP. The song taps into their hard rock influences for a more energetic sound than they've ever done before. Follow the band at The Empties Music on Instagram to stay up to date for upcoming shows and their EP release. And don't forget to check out the CFRC 2025 Release Radar Listener's Choice Survey, happening now via CFRC.ca, where you can vote for your top 10 local singles and albums released in Kingston this year and enter for a chance to win great raffle prizes. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Medicine Man by The Empties on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Revelation Radio. Explore the sound shaping subculture
Tune in to 101.9 CFRC Wednesdays from 11 to noon to uncover revelations mixed into music from across the alternative scene, underground, and across the globe.
No rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Revelation Radio, Wednesdays at 11.